much did it help, by the way, for you on Saturday with the atmosphere with Tennessee, Kentucky? Because I have to be honest with you, Friday night, it just wasn't helping me. You know, there just wasn't enough of an oomph there as far as the electricity in the building. You know, long week, and just like what you have to do in covering this. Well, Saturday, you know, it didn't. I mean, boy, if you weren't pumped up and if you were in that building, especially when Tennessee and Kentucky took the court on Saturday afternoon, then something's wrong with you.
Yeah, you know, I guess, like, for me, Friday was still pretty good because, like, Wednesday was just like, oh, you know, if you'd cover the Wednesday of one of these tournaments, you know, that's – and, of course, Vanderbilt's season ended that night. But Friday it got better. But, yeah, I mean, Saturday, that was absolutely fantastic. I mean, in every aspect of that day, the crowd, you know, and I thought Friday I was like, man, Vols fans are just going to be overwhelmed. And you figured Kentucky would have more people because this is on the calendar every year.
Like, right.
But I thought Tennessee fans actually did a much better job than I would have guessed in getting in there. And then just the game was, I mean, you kind of course, you know, right around on tight deadline, that was sort of not ideal late when you sort of think it's going one way. Also, I was like, it's changing. You got to adjust, but boy, that was just tremendous basketball from the Vols. And of course, then it gets followed up Sunday, and you're like, what the heck was that? I mean, I think there's certainly probably a little bit of, you know, feeling like they won the tournament on Saturday. Not that that's an excuse, but that along with Auburn just really playing at a high level right now.
Well, and I made that. I did the quick math, and I mean, look, no offense, and not taking anything from what Auburn had to do, but you know, you start Auburn's journey on Thursday night. They knock off a 12 seed in Missouri, and then they advance, and you know, they beat a Florida team that's the 8 seed. I mean, when you just look at their path, how they got there with, you know, beating Missouri, South Carolina, then Florida. I mean, their path was easier than what Tennessee. And honestly, from a Tennessee, there's two ways of looking at the way the tournament played out. I thought the fact that the, you know, taking care of business, first night out against Mississippi State, and then getting a win against a program like Kentucky, that going into this SEC tournament, they were probably one of your four number one seeds. And so the fact that Tennessee now, from a mental standpoint, know they can beat anybody in the country, even at this time of year. But I also thought that loss yesterday from a mental standpoint will help them if they utilize that loss in a good way to realize no matter who they're taking on, whether it's like last year getting beat by the Cinderella story or this year, no matter who they're facing, they can't worry about are they the best team in the country or whatever. If they want to keep playing, they have to win that ball game.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, I think you make some good points about the easier path. It's still four games in 4 days. And, you know, but I think Auburn's depth also is better than Tennessee's. And, you know, actually, Bruce Pearl was forced to sit Jared Harper for a whole chunk.
Right. He played 2 minutes. He played two. Yeah. He was a guy. He was their star on Saturday, making 5 of 7 3-point range. And he played 2 minutes in that first half. I thought he had gotten in the doghouse. And I realized that he had the two fouls. I was like, okay, because I enjoyed watching him play on Saturday.
Yeah, well, he's a tremendous player, but you know, but look, I mean, that's a very interesting team. Auburn, I could see them making a run. I could see them being out fast too. They can shoot themselves in or out of anything. But yeah, for Tennessee, I mean, I think they understand. You know, last year they got to the tournament, they tasted victory, and then they got into one of those games, and of course, at the time, it was like, oh, my gosh, you lost to Loyola. Loyola goes on to the Final Four.
Right.
That was one of those games where it was actually kind of like the Kentucky game. They made a late charge. Lamonte Turner hit a huge three. But then, you know, Loyola hits the essentially buzzer beater to beat them. So, I mean, I think all these experiences should help them, should inform them, and prepare them, which still is no guarantee in this thing. And there's not one foolproof thing. I mean, if you tell me Duke's going to, you know, go 2 for 20 in the second round and lose, I'm not going to be shocked. And so Tennessee has to know, and I think Tennessee does know, that it's going to be very difficult, probably after playing Colgate.
Here's the thing, and I look at the high expectations for the two programs that played in the second semifinal game. First of all, John Calipari, $9 million plus a year. You know, the Kentucky fans, you know, Final Four or bust. Anything short of that, and it's been a disappointing season. For Tennessee, a program that's trying to not, you know, trying to be more than just a football school, this is an opportunity this year with this team, with this talent, to do something that's never been done in men's basketball program history. And you know, look, there's a lot at stake here moving forward for this program, this particular run in the tournament. You know, if you can't make it through this first weekend, you know, to the Sweet 16, it's a disappointment. And I don't know where that level is from a fan's perspective, but you got to give the fans something to pay them back for showing the support that they've done and been able to provide this team throughout the season. Otherwise, it's like, okay, it's just a something to keep us busy until football season.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's I think it's just been incredible at Thompson Bowling this year. And I think this is a team that I think Tennessee fans probably really needed, you know, with the way things have gone in football and the way things have gone for the Lady Vols and that program, which, of course, just squeaked in recently. I mean, we just found out
they're the 11 seed. Yeah, take it on UCLA, yeah. The 6 seed. By the way, I'm remind me to bring this up because I have a point about this, the leaking of the bracket. But, you know, go back to your conversation, though.
Yeah, so I think that there's a hunger for something really good there, and this team has kind of filled that void. And, you know, you could argue that this is the best team Tennessee's ever had, and that's what makes it so disappointing to not have a regular season banner, to not have the SEC tournament, and to lose both of them to the guy who used to coach you, Bruce Pearl.
Right.
Who I don't care.
There's a cloud there. There's a cloud down there on the plains.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I hope Tennessee fans, and I think the vast, vast, vast majority do feel this way, realize that they are better off with Rick Barnes and Bruce Pearl. But still, I mean, that hurts, and that's tough. It's too bad this team has made a mark, but, you know, there's almost more pressure on this tournament. I think there was going to be pressure to make a run anyway. And now, of course, if this team can get to Minneapolis, the first Final Four in school history, that dwarfs any number of SEC banners you could ever pile up together. I mean, that's just, you know, that's the ultimate achievement. The national championship, the ultimate achievement, but the ultimate stage in the sport is the Final Four. And I think this team really has a nice draw to get there. I mean, of course, it's not going to be easy. I mean, if it's Cincinnati in the second round, that's going to be an absolute, you know, a tough, tough game. But I don't see anyone that they couldn't beat at their best, including number one seed Virginia. So, you know, it's up to them to take good shots, to take care of the ball, which they usually do, and to not have those defensive vacations here and there that can prove really costly. I mean, they've got to be on everything for 40 minutes.
Were they just trying to sell tickets in Jacksonville? Because honestly, if you didn't care about ticket sales or anything like that, Tennessee should have been the number two seed in Jacksonville taking on Abilene Christian, whereas Kentucky should be in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, in their matchup. And the reason I know why you start, you know, well, they don't really care about that, but you look down the road, you're certainly thinking Kentucky, North Carolina with a trip to the Final Four on the line. I get that. But I don't think the fact that you're, you know, Tennessee beat Kentucky 2 out of 3 times this year, and Tennessee, if they get by Colgate, which they should, there's a potential there. They're taking on Cincinnati in Cincinnati's backyard in Columbus. And I just felt like, you know, when you look at the fact that Tennessee should have been rewarded by going to Jacksonville instead of Columbus, Ohio.
Well, I guess, to me, the reward, I mean, look, we've seen it with the selection committee. I mean, Michigan State, you know, got put in Duke's thing, you know, after beating Michigan for the third straight time because of geography. I thought going into Saturday's game, the winner of Kentucky, Tennessee, gets the benefit of being closer to home. So I think Tennessee won Columbus, Saturday. You know, you can look at the bracket, but, you know, they don't look at it that way. They look at it, the geography has overtaken. They used to do the S curve and go low 2 with top 1. That stuff's all gone. The pod system is about geography, which is about overall really about tickets and having more butts in the seats. But, you know, it does work out for both spots because Kentucky will pack any place. And Cincinnati being as low as a 7, which I think was low for what Cincinnati did this year, works out that you can get them in there, and now you'll have Cincinnati fans. I personally think, though, that Tennessee fans are going to show up big time.
I hope they
drivable.
Do.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. You know, you never know. You can't totally look at Nashville and say, well, here you go. It's going to be a caravan. I mean, Nashville's different. Tons of Tennessee fans live here. But, you know, I think a drivable locale for this team, you know, with a fan base that big, I think you'll see a lot of orange.
I love the fact it could have been more. I'm not 100% happy with the committee, with the way they treated the mid-majors. It could have been worse. I think they kind of split the difference and said, okay, Belmont, you're in. St. John's, you're in. Sorry, UNC Greensboro. I would have been totally ecstatic if one more mid-major had made it in like a UNC Greensboro. But the fact that Belmont becomes only the second team in OVC history to get an at-large berth. And I was telling the story, you know, last hour. You know, they made it back in 87. Middle Tennessee State did. And that was also the year that Austin Peay takes on Illinois, and this is what made Dick Vitale famous. He said, okay, if Austin Peay beats Illinois, then I'll stand on my head on TV. Well, Austin Peay won, and he did. and then I looked ahead to that next game. A lot of people don't remember, but Austin Peay was up by 10 over Providence, a team that had Billy Donovan on it, was coached by Rick Pitino. And with 5 minutes to go, Austin Peay's up by 10. Some missed free throws in the end was the difference. And so Providence advances. They beat Alabama to advance to the Elite Eight. And then Providence makes us to the Final Four. We wonder, you know, if Rick Pitino, how fast-tracked he would have been if Providence had gone quietly into the night getting beat by Austin Peay in that round of 32.
You know, that's amazing because I totally remember Austin Peay beating Illinois and the whole Dick Vitale thing. And I clearly, you know, obviously anybody remembers the Providence run. Chubby Billy Donovan playing for Pitino. But I don't I had totally forgotten that those two met each other. That's great history right there. Wow.
All right, so other things that you had that you took away from you as far as the SEC tournament, what really played out for you other than the obviously Auburn winning the tournament and Tennessee, you know, at least advancing to the Sunday finals?
Well, I mean, I think I don't come out of this because there was some talk in the press room yesterday, well, and Auburn, this team is, I tell you what, they could. Now, I've thought all along that's a super talented team. They are very talented. They've had their ups and downs. They've got depth. They do what they do well. I still don't buy them as a Final Four team. I just don't think that the things they do, I don't think they can sustain that for four games. And frankly, I don't know that they get past Kansas in the second round.
You're going Kansas. You better. Here's the thing.
Yeah,
New Mexico State, that's a 12 versus 5. And if you're looking for a really one of the better 12 versus 5 upsets, New Mexico State over Auburn, you might want to really strongly look at.
No, honestly, I'm with you. I think it's very possible they won't even get to that. But I take away that there are two teams that can, you know, can get to Minneapolis from this league. And I think there are some other teams that can do some damage. I still like Mississippi State. I feel like Ole Miss, you know, has lost something here. I mean, they were playing so well. And, you know, that loss to Alabama, I mean, that's just a game you can't lose when you're up that big. I really like how Florida's playing now. And then LSU is going to be the most interesting team. I guess you could look at them and say, hey, like if LSU were to get to the Sweet 16, get past Michigan State, that could be an interesting matchup with Duke, you know, with that length and with Tremont Waters. But I just really question, without Will Wade and with all the stuff around that team, whether, you know, it has the will to get there, if it's going to flame out fast. But, you know, it'll be really interesting and a growing story if they win, because obviously, just like the SEC tournament, the SEC breathed a huge sigh of relief when they were out. I don't care what anybody says. The NCAA would much rather not have to deal with a team that may be vacating whatever it's doing, advancing deep into the tournament.
You know, I'm all for the SEC teams. I'm all for LSU getting blown out in their very first game. First of all, I don't think Tony Benford is – I mean, look, I thought he cost his squad against Florida with an unnecessary technical foul called against him in that game on Friday. But more importantly, look, I'm not even going to pretend that, you know, whether or not it's just one player involved here. Now, I understand why there's no evidence that any players took money that was offered, so that's why we're not talking about any suspensions. But I also believe that if you're making offers to one, you probably made offers to more than one. And so I don't want to go, I don't feel sorry for quote-unquote this team when we don't even know how many players on this team could have been offered and could have accepted money.
Well, yeah, I mean, Javonte Smart is far from the biggest recruit Will Wade has landed at LSU.
That's my point.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little, look at how the sausage is made. And, you know, it's also, and you hear some people that'll say, wow, this is just, you know, this happens everywhere. And it's, no, I don't think this happens everywhere. I really don't think that at all. You know, I think that there are some coaches out there who are, 100% put the foot on the pedal, cheat everywhere you can cheat, and it's about getting players and winning, and that's it. And I think there are a lot of coaches who don't want to do that and don't do that. And there's always money flowing through AAU basketball. And, you know, I mean, the system is built for under-the-table payments. But I think this was an extreme case, in my opinion, and particularly a coach having that kind of a conversation. So I think a lot of people are with you, Johnny. Would love to see LSU bounce quickly. If they aren't, again, man, it's going to be a wild story.
By the way, and I, you know, told everybody that I wouldn't use any names. Everything was off the record. I got a chance to have a lot of conversations with former coaches, former standout players, etc. I wanted their opinion about Bryce Drew as a coach. It was almost 100% what a nice guy Bryce Drew is. 100%. Outstanding recruiter. I couldn't really find one that thought he was a good coach at this level.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think you're right that the first instinct people have is, yeah, really nice coach. You know, I think certainly you ask any coach on the record, they're always going to defend other coaches. And I think any coach out there would look at this situation and said, you are insane if you think you should fire any coach after 3 years. How could you possibly have a full evaluation? Now, I think in some extreme cases, I think you speed the clock up a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think Bryce Drew did some good things at Valparaiso. I mean, he has a very good record there. He got the NCAA tournament with them. He got some very good players there. It's not like – I mean, the guy's been around basketball his whole life, played in the NBA. He has tremendous mentors in his dad and brother. So he knows basketball extremely well. It's not that. I mean, I think it's – coaching is – very much about, you know, getting the most out of people. And, you know, some people have that skill and some people can sort of strike that balance between pushing players but still keeping them kind of in their corner. And I just don't think Bryce Drew has pushed his players. You know, I don't think he's gotten the most out of them individually, certainly not collectively. At some point, you know, you either do or you don't. You either win or you don't. But I think we're going to be looking at next year, year four, and sort of this last-ditch effort to salvage this tenure.
I'll just give you a couple examples, you know, because everyone's talking about, well, he was a solid coach at Valparaiso. All right, Butch Jones was a solid coach at Cincinnati. Jerry Faust was a solid coach in high school, at the high school level, before he was named head coach at Notre Dame. How did that work out for both of them? So just because you were an outstanding coach at a previous stop doesn't mean that you're equipped to handle the next level that you have now taken a job at.
Agree. I can't believe you went Jerry Faust number.
Well, see, that kind of puts it in proper perspective now, doesn't it?
No, but I mean, look, it's, and you know, there are other coaches. It's funny because I'm kind of writing a little bit about this today, so it's on my mind. But like Rick Byrd, like if Rick Byrd had gotten the Tennessee job back when Konzo Martin got it, I think Rick Byrd would have won a lot of games at Tennessee and done very well because he develops players individually. He's got a great balance between – he gets after him, but, you know, he's got he keeps it even keel and keeps it light, too, has a great sense of humor. And I think offensively, he's just such a good coach, both team-wise and, again, individually. I think he – I think Rick Bird could have been like John Beilein, another guy who was lower level his whole life for 20-some years, finally got a shot to move up, and has been fantastic. So there are guys like that who I think there's a lot. I think there's many coaches, and many coaches have been successful who came from mid-major to upper. And sometimes I think you see the limitations of some guys, and I think that's what we've seen with Bryce Drew.
I know we've had a chance to talk some free agency with regards to the Titans last week in our last visit, but we haven't had a chance to talk about Ryan Tannehill, now part of the Titans organization. I've been saying this since we've had chances to visit with each other, Joe, and I've been saying it since when Marcus Mariota was drafted, out of college, is the fact that, you know, coaches, I don't care at the college level, NFL level, they love competition at the positions, right? Because they believe competition makes you better at whatever position you're talking about on the football field, right? Except Marcus Mariota never had to beat out anyone for the starting job. He was given the keys, handed it over. Nobody has been brought in to ever push Marcus Mariota as far as the starting job. I think that has all changed now with Ryan Tannehill. If Marcus Mariota doesn't start showing more consistency, here's a chance for Ryan Tannehill with a new environment. Doesn't necessarily just have to be the backup quarterback. He could earn starting time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we've argued about this before, and actually, it's funny. I had an argument on our podcast today about this. Like, I don't think Mariota needs any sort of extra incentive, or needs to up his game in terms of effort, desire, time put in, any of that stuff. He needs to perform better. Will a better backup behind him make him perform better? I don't know if I buy that. He has to stay healthy. He has to be better. But it's a good move for insurance, because what we've seen so far is that Marcus Mariota is not going to play 16 games.
All right,
now you have a guy who could actually win you a big game if and when he does go down.
Who's the Tennessee Sports Writer of the Year for the last 2 years?
I don't know, man.
That would be one Joe Rexroad, right? And who also resides in the city who has won this award previously? That'd be one Teresa Walker with the Associated Press. Do you not think that both you and Teresa, you know, living and residing and working here in this market, make each other better?
Yes. And that's, I mean, I think that's true in a lot of cases.
You're just not going to give me the...
I honestly think that the reason he's so beloved in that locker room is those guys are like, dang, he actually works harder than any of us, you know? So I don't think that this is going to be any sort of like mental edge for him. That's just my opinion. I think he's got it. Will he perform better and be healthy? I don't know, but I think that's separate from Tannehill.
Why was Tua Tagovailoa the starting quarterback for Alabama in 2018 after the last 2 years being led by one Jalen Hurts? It's because all of a sudden that locker room realized Tua Tagovailoa better represents us as a leader, better represents us as the quarterback of this team. He won that locker room. So before we say Marcus Mariota owns that locker room, let's see what Ryan Tannehill and the effect that he will have on that locker room once he arrives.
Let's be clear, though. Tua won the job because he is way more talented than Jalen Hurts, right? I mean, he's just so far beyond him as a passer.
Look at Ryan Tannehill's numbers. Forget about the first two. You look at what Ryan Tannehill has been able to produce, touchdown interception ratios, 20,000-plus yards in the NFL. Look at his quarterback ratings. And I'm just saying that it's not such a clear-cut thing that, oh, this is Marcus's team.
All right. I mean, I think he's maybe the best backup in the league. I'll give him that. And he's been fine. And maybe he's better than Mariota, but if he is, then – I don't think it's because he's, like, knocking on the Pro Bowl door. I think the ceiling's higher for Mariota.
I will throw this out that you have to agree on. If you're the backup on a team with Marcus Mariota, that means you're also a part-time starter, because Marcus Mariota is not going to start every game.